Okay, apologies to those of you that are listening in at home, Steve. last week we neglected to record the shiur, which ran from the bottom of Yud Chet Amud Beis to the middle of Yud Tet Amud Aleph. You can learn it up on your own. But now we're in the middle of Yud Tet Amud Aleph. We're learning this Mishnah about Ben Ir Shalach L'Krach Uben Krach Shalach L'Ir. Someone from Efrat goes to Yerushalayim, someone from Yerushalayim comes to Efrat. Which day do they celebrate Purim on? So we developed this idea that a lot of it has to do with where you intend to be where.
The night. Where you intend to be when.
Where? Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Where you intend to be
when you wake up.
In other words, that Olos HaShachar, and this seems to be Rashi's position, that Olos HaShachar is Koveya. That if on the morning of the 14th, Purim morning, we call Purim morning, you wake up in Efrat, you are chayiv for the mitzvot in Efrat on the 14th, which means hopefully you had read the Megillah the night before.
Well, that's what I was about to say. It's a bit silly because then you realize in the morning when it's too late to do the mitzvah in the evening.
You have until the morning.
You have until the morning. Yeah.
It's not that you have. It's not that it switches to the morning. So you have until the morning to do it because that's where you have to be.
Right. Now it's a question of, like, is it in fact where you wake up in the morning, or what's the other possibility?
Do you have intention.
Yeah, where you intend to spend the night, even though.
So
we all know cases. In other words, you go to shul to hear the Megillah at night on Purim night, Motzei Shushan Purim, and at 2 a.m. you have to go. Shaar Tzedek. Right, you have to go to Miun for this reason, or that reason, or the other reason.
What's the regular Purim? Then you have to go to Shaar Tzedek.
No, in other words, on Purim night, you read the
Megillah.
Not Shushan Purim. On Purim.
Right.
On Purim night, Motzei.
Purim.
I meant Motzei Tanis Esther. Uh-huh. Motzei Tanis Esther. You're in the front. Motzei Tanis Esther, you come to shul, you hear the Megillah, you go home, you go to sleep. Middle of the night, your kid falls out of bed. You have to take him to Shaar Tzedek, you're there all night. So you wake up in Olos HaShachar, you're still in Miyun, waiting for somebody to see you.
You don't go to sleep.
So that's easy.
With all due respect to Shaar Tzedek.
Yeah, no, the other way, that's not a problem.
Because then you go to Shushan Purim.
You just come back. But if the problem is if you didn't obtain any additional chilim, you just would stay in Yerushalayim. The question is if you were in Yerushalayim and had to leave.
Listen to me. What do you want to give the shir? So in that case, you wake up. You fell asleep on an uncomfortable chair in the Miyun in Shaar Tzedek. I once made a donation to Shaar Tzedek. They did not use it to reupholster the chairs in the Miyun, I can tell you that, having spent a night there not long ago. So it turns out that you are the Ben Ir Shehalach L'Krach. Right? And you're off the hook. The Megillah that you read the night before was Torah Lishmo. Because retroactively, you had not been chayiv.
Right. And then what happens when your kid on that day gets the cast on and you go home and you're back in?
And then you come home and you want to sleep in your own bed, having had a bad night's sleep on one of those folding chairs in the Shaar Tzedek Cheder Miyun. So it's the apocryphal Leibovitz story, right? Where you were not bar chiyuva in either place, according to what we understand to be the mainstream halacha. It is not unanimous. And you can imagine a scenario working in the opposite. If, in fact, it has not to do with where you are at the moment of the cock-a-doodle-doo, but what your kavana was when you went to sleep the night before, so then maybe you morning in Shaar Tzedek Hospital, you still chayiv in the Megillah.
But let's say someone, there was a funeral that night, Purim night.
The person who died doesn't have to be in Megillah.
Right, that's... But someone who was in Anut would not have, they wouldn't have the chiyuv.
You have no chiyuv.
That night. But by the morning they would. So in other words, the daybreak for them isn't the issue. They suddenly, like Purim comes, and they suddenly are mechuyav.
Would that mean
that they had, they didn't, the daybreak wasn't a factor, but they're in Efrat, do they suddenly have an obligation, or did that mean that they just, like, because the daybreak didn't do anything, does that mean that they don't have an obligation for the day?
And then there's the funeral's Purim morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no. So they were. I'm sorry. One second. Yeah. So that, in other words, the nature of aninut is that osik b'mitzvah poter min mitzvah, but it's not that you live in a world where the mitzvah don't apply to you.
No, but say for example, like in Sfirat Omer, if someone was missed because of that, then they wouldn't be able to continue because they weren't there.
Say it, but that's not a technicality that you missed the whole day.
Whether it's a one mitzvah for everything or a separate count for every a separate mitzvah for every day.
I presume that you come home from the funeral on Purim morning, you still hear the Megillah. And I presume.
We had a situation where Ilana was coming out of Misgafla Dach on Purim day, coming back to Efrat, which means she wouldn't have heard Megillah.
And she wasn't chayiv because was chayiv. Yeah. Because she was in that case a ben or a bat ear shehalcha lekrach.
Doesn't the yoledet? And then she's going back to her flat for Shushan Purim.
I mean, she wasn't a yoledet because she had given birth a few days before, but
she wasn't getting out.
As you said something before that what happened is retroactively he wasn't
high. Retroactively, he wasn't high the night before. Yeah.
So there's a question: what if he was the balkori?
What if he was the balkori? Is an interesting question. So, well, we'll see that halacha lamaisa. One should try to avoid that, right? In other words, if you're not chayiv in that day, you probably shouldn't be the balkore. But milet brera, and certainly retroactive, you can't say that this is a bidieved which was lechatchila. In other words, when he did it, he was presumably as chayiv as anyone else, right? But you can't uncrack that egg. But lechatchila. Lechatchila, if you know we're here, if it's Purim and there's a guy, he's a good balkore, but he's not planning on. He's planning on going back to Yerushalayim, and he's not planning on having Purim on Yudalit. Lechatchila, he should not be chosen as the shlich tzibur, as the balkore. But the eved, if he leaned, you'd be otze.
Our problem to get a shiur was probably 1981 at the end of the shiur.
That's a pretty good memory.
Though the only thing I really remember is the word something to the effect of at the end of it was. Bottom line, guys, don't go anywhere. Just don't move anywhere.
Stay where you are. Safek Kavanah. You said it might be Kavanah. What about Safek Kavanah?
Kavanah?
Not Safek Kavanah, but you don't know. In other words, let's say you're in Efrati, and you think you might, you're not sure when you have to go to Yerushalayim. You might have to be in Yerushalayim for the night of the 15th. So should you, but you might not. You might say you're on call. I don't know, something like that.
Fortunately, we don't paskin this way, so your question is only theoretical. But
it is only theoretical. We don't paskin. So
no, we paskin, it has to do with where you wake up.
But okay, so you might wake up, even not coming up. You might wake up. You might wake up.
He got so drunk after the Megillah.
If you're on call,
you don't know.
On call.
You might get called in the middle of the night. In which case, you're not going to have time to get the Megillah reading anyway. If you're a safek, should you really hear the night before, even in a front? I mean, a front is weird.
Look,
because
there's nothing wrong with actually hearing.
Bracha.
So if you're not laning, you hear.
So Steve, you know, somebody who lanes and they think there's a chance. That they might have to go in, but they might not. Should they do the bracha because then at least you...
I think you should. I mean, I don't know.
Imagine it's not
I don't know, but I presume that you say it with a bracha because right now he's here. He's planning on being here. He's hoping to be here.
No, on the 15th. You're in a front on the 15th. You might get called in to go in that night.
It has to be...
Oh, no. To lane preemptively on the case 50-50 that maybe
chance.
You'll...
A 50-50
I don't
chance.
Know. I don't know.
Probably just without the bracha. The bracha's not in Ma'akev, I assume.
Correct. But I don't know. Anyway, now the Gemara says, you see, we're like 23 lines down from the top. It's the first word on the line is mukaf. You see the Tosfot ben kfar?
Yeah.
So it's like two lines below there. The first word is mukaf, period. V'omar Rava, ben kfar shehalach le'ir, ben kach uven kach korei imahim. Here now, and until now we were talking about the Ben Ir and the Ben Krach. But now we have the Ben Kfar. Remember, Ben, yeah. In other words, Ben Ir reads on the 14th. Ben Krach reads on the 15th. The Ben Kfar reads on the 11th, 12th, 13th, or 14th, depending upon when Purim falls out in relation to Monday and Thursday. There's a special dispensation for the Bnei Kfarim to read it on the preceding Monday or Thursday when they come into town. So ben kfar shehalach le'ir. But if a ben kfar finds himself in town, that is the day, let's say Purim is on a Wednesday, The 14th is on a Wednesday. So the preceding Monday was the 12th. The B'nai Kfarim would have come into town on Monday, on the 12th, and they would have landed on the 12th. But this particular Ben Kfar also came in on Wednesday, on Yud Dalet, on Purim itself. So Rava says he should also lane with them.
Right, but he didn't come in on the previous
Monday? Well, no, he doesn't.
It doesn't make a difference.
Presumably he did come in beforehand.
And heard the Megillah.
If
he didn't come in, then it's obviously right.
So Ben Kfar Shalach Le'ir, Kore, Ben Kach Uven Kach, Kore Emahem. My time, why? Hai Kivnei Ha'ir Boy. In other words, it's not like the case we've been talking till now, where it's Purim's either this day or that day. Right? Here the guy already had Purim. Right? He was already Yotze Purim.
The Bidyevit Purim, because it's a special one which was not real Purim.
But now he comes back and he's in town on the regular day, not the day that he needed a special dispensation for. It's my time. Hai Kivnei Ha'ir Boy L'mikre. He's like a regular Ben Ha'ir, and he should have to read. V'rabananuhu de'ikule al hakfarim. What's the real actual date of Purim for the B'nai Hakfarim?
The 14th.
The 14th. Mm-hmm. What's the real actual date of Purim for a Ben Ir?
The 14th.
What's the real actual date for a Ben Krach?
14th.
Well,
15th. No, 15th. The 15th. The 15th. Right?
Yeah.
For the B'nai Kfarim, they're like a Benir. They're like a Poruz, L'chol Davar. Elama, we have a special kula for them to allow them to read early. But if the Taka in town, they're like a regular 14 person. Kedei, Ela Hikilu ala Kfarim, Kedei Shisapku Maim Mazon Lachayim, Shebe Krochin. Hani Mili. Because that's the language. Right, but as here, Krochen doesn't literally mean the walled cities, it means the cities. In other words, we want them to come into town for market day, whether the market day is in a big city with a wall or without a wall. But that's the language of the Gemara over there on Daf Dalid, so it quotes it Krochen. But here it's Krochen, not to the exclusion of an unwalled city.
By the way, we didn't discuss the case of a Ben Kfar left the Krach. Is there a difference in that regard?
Presumably. In other words, there were Kfarin around the walled cities also, and they would lane. In other words, in the same way that they would have to, you know, but their day is really the 15th. So Hani Mili ki Atya Beduchte. So that kula of laning early is when he is in his own place, when he's in his kfar. So if he's in his kfar, so he gets the special kula of being able to lane on the 11th, 12th, 13th. Aval ki ati l'bi'ir, but when he comes into town, kivnei'ir, boy the mikre, he has to read.
But that's a weird case because, I was saying, he comes in at night.
He comes in, he sleeps there, yeah.
He's going to have all the other mitzvahs on Purim on the 14th anyway, where he's there.
Right. Eitvei Abaye. So Abaye does not like this halacha of Rava. That we're mechayev the Ben Kfar in an extra. Essentially, he has to have Purim again.
Right? Only if he stays at night.
Right.
Let's read the Megillah again.
Ben krach shahalach le'ir uven kach. In other words, so eitvei abai. So he brings a brisa. The brisa says, Ben krach shahalach le'ir. Ben kach uven kach kore kim komo.
Not like Mishnah.
That's a brisa that's unfamiliar to us. Ben krach shahalach le'ir. A Yerushalmi that comes to Efrat on the 14th. He should continue his Yerushalayim practice, says the Bryce.
Because it's not contradicting the Mishnah, because the Mishnah actually didn't ever explicitly say that case. We sort of assumed that it was talking both directions, but it actually only mentioned it explicitly.
Right. So, however, Abaye brings this Bryce and then messes around with it. He says, No. Salke datcha b'im atid lachzor tal yemilta elalav ben kfar. In other words, don't read. He says it's, this brisa is not the nusach is messed up. Don't say ben krach shehalach le'ir. Say ben kfar shehalach le'ir. In which case you'd have to read it ben kfar shehalach le'ir ben kachu ben kach kore kim komo. In other words, the ben kfar read on the 11th, the 12th, or the 13th, and then he comes back for another day on the 14th.
So he doesn't have to read it again.
So he doesn't have to read it again. He already has to read it like the people of his place, right? Against Rava.
It actually makes sense, because if the original takana was for them to be able to provide for the people, then they would think if they happened to be doing some business in the.
If I was coming on Wednesday, I'm not going to come in on Monday this week.
Then I won't do. Then the whole takana will fall apart,
right?
Because they'll think I have to do it anyway. Right. When I come in for my doctor appointment, I'm going to come in. So then I won't do it. So then they won't be providing these things.
Right. So Abaye counters Rava's position with a creative reading of this brisa. But Rava responds, "Look, once you want to read the brisa, the words ain't l'davar itself. Once you want to be, and that's." It's not that he says, I have a different girsa of the brisa, right? You know, like often we have this. One Amora will quote a brisa, and the other Amora will say,
I have a different
go outside and say your brisa in the street, meaning your version of the brisa is all messed up. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, you can read the brisa this way. So Rava says, once you want to be creative about reading the brisa, you can read it this way also. Right? V'lav tarutze mitratze tane kore mehem. You could also read it by saying,
instead of kore
mehem. Right? So, manavshach. Right? So it doesn't work. So now, halacha lamaise. So here's an essay. Here, pass these out. I mean, I don't know. We're not going to go through this whole thing, but I came across it today. This is an essay by Rav Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yikom Domo, on our sugya, and he summarizes the whole all the shitot. So it's for your Shabbos reading. Yeah, you know who he is. But here's the dinim. In other words, the Mishnah in the beginning of the Masechta said Ben Yir Shehalach L'Krach Ben. No, I'm sorry. The Mishnah here said Ben Yir Shehalach L'Krach Ben Krach Shehalach L'Ir Yimatid Lach Zolim Komo Kore Kim Komo V'im Lav Kore Mahim. That's the Mishnah that we've been working off of. But the Mishnah, what's the essential detail that the Mishnah leaves out? No, not that. The reverse order is easy to intuit, which is in Lamaisa what we do.
The time factor of when.
When? Imatid lachzor, what, a month from now? Right? You can imagine that. We know the Mishnah. We learned the Mishnah in Psochim a few years ago about Mokom Shinogu. Right? That if I come to your town, and in your town you're machmir about a particular matter, but I come from a place that I'm mekel, it's not proper for me to act according to my kulas in a town where everybody's machmir, and vice versa, right? And vice versa. If I come to your town and I come from a place where we're machmir on something, and in your town you're mekel on it, I can't throw caution to the wind and give up my chumras, right? I have to hold like my. Of course, the Gemara wants to know when do you become a resident of the new place and take on the local menagim. Of course, this is fascinating. The time I recall you were interested in this topic. This is altogether fascinating, the idea of menagamokum, which is something that we've largely lost, maybe besides some chassidish enclaves. But we don't have such an idea of menagamokum. We don't even have nusach atfila.
It's the result of kibbutz galil.
It's the happy result of kibbutz. It's the result of the happy phenomenon of kibbutz galil.
Well, I would say it's. I mean, that's a positive spin in it. You could say it's also the unhappy result of the, you know, Korban Europa, which is probably more to do with the destruction of
the unhappy result of what?
Of the Shoah and everything, and all the okay. You know, the not just, even before that, but all the thing that the destruction of European Jewry.
Well, you could say it's also the result of Golos.
But no, but there was in the past. We had had various Galiot, and we had managed to keep them. Yeah. Thing of Menachem Mekon, but we weren't keeping it.
But it also had to do. It also had to do with the fact that throughout much of history until the modern era, most people never traveled further than 50 miles from their place of birth. What? Yes, they were.
But there wasn't a thing. There was no Menachem Mekon of America, or even in various cities. There wasn't anything like that. That was not. That had nothing to do with kibbutz.
Never lived in America for many generations.
No, but
in America, it might have existed on the level of a kahila.
I mean, there were places in America that did have a strong, rooted, the Breuers community in the Washington Heights.
That's not a
Minhaga Makom.
But your example of talking about where you go to a place, you don't go to Breuers. Right. You don't, you know, you're,
okay. But maybe there are places. Maybe there's amongst the Syrians in Brooklyn. In Elizabeth, New Jersey, you know, near where I grew up, which was really a kind of a sui generis community, you had a Rav whose son-in-law became the Rav and served for 50 plus years. And ran the community on the European style of the Rabbonus. He was the Rav Ha'ir, which was not a model that you had in America. There were attempts here and there.
The Malbim.
What?
The Malbim was supposed to be appointed as the Rav, I think, of New York. So there were attempts.
Oh, I'm unaware of that. But so, in other words, besides Rabbi Soloveitchik was the Rav of the United Orthodox Communities of Boston. Rabbi Jacob Joseph was the rabbi of New York, but that was the only such example. And I think
Chicago, the Ritbaz.
He was like the posek.
No, he was supposed to be the rabbi, the whole story about that. He ended up like getting kicked out. Mm-hmm. He had to run away. I thought on Shabbat in a car because they were, I don't know. It was like they were like chasing him out of the city, and then he came to Tzfat and became this major posek. But it was Chicago did not work out well for him.
Right. So in Elizabeth, which is a small community, you know, this might not have worked in one of the major metropolises, but he was the Rav Ha'ir, meaning he was. There were a variety of shuls, and Rabbi Teitz was the rabbi of all the shuls, and he was in charge of the schools, and he was in charge of the mikveh, and he was in charge of the kashrus, and he was in charge of the chevra kedisha, and he was the chief rabbi lachol. L'chol davar.
It's hard to think of other examples like that.
There really aren't other examples like that. And today, Elizabeth is not like that. Right? In other words, his son, in other words, the third generation, meaning there was his father-in-law was the first rabbi in town when there was, you know, nobody. And then Rabbi Pinchas Meir Teitz, Pinchas Mordechai Teitz, was the rabbi for 50 some odd years. And then his son, Rabbi Elazar Meir Teitz, who only recently retired, but after that, the next generation, each shul hired its own rabbi, and the centralized rabbinic authority kind of petered out. But they had an idea of like minhag ha-makom, that in Elizabeth there were certain things that they did because Rabbi Teitz said that's the way to do it, and you would meet kids that would. Like, you know, there were people that would show up in Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Teitz held the second days of Sfira. You know, the different shittot about which days of Sfira are the Yemei Avelut. So the mainstream Ashkenazi minhag is from the beginning until Lag BaOmer, right? But there's a different shittah that you go from Rosh Chodesh until Shlosh Yemei Avela, and that was Rabbi Teitz's minhag, and that's the way they did it in Elizabeth. And a lot of people did. I don't know if it's still this way, but it used to be in Elizabeth. That's what you did. If you lived in Elizabeth, you didn't make chasanas after Lag BaOmer, when everybody else made chasanas. So that's a counterintuitive type of thing. So you can imagine a scenario where we would say, no, you do as the, right, you come to, you know, that's wherever you are, that's, what's the expression? No matter where you go, that's where you are, right? That's, yeah, when Yerushalayim does Yerushalayim. So, so the question of when, so the Mishnah leaves out this question of Atid Lachzor, when Atid Lachzor? So the Yerushalmi brings the possibility of this idea that you could have 2 days of Purim, and the pseudo Leibovitz position that you could have no days of Purim. That's the sheet that brought Yerushalmi in the name of Rav Bun ben Barchia. Rav Bun Barchia, Boe Ben Ir Sha'akar Dirato Lele Chamishasar, Nitchayev Kan, Uben Krach Sha'akar Dirato Belel Arbasar Niftar Mikanu Mikan. Rashi.
I mean, is there significance in the fact that he relates to it as Akar Dirato?
I think that's just the metaphor for Ben Ir Sha'alach Lekrach, yeah. I don't think it means that he like changed residence.
Right, like he moved right there.
Yeah, no, I don't think it means like changed his address in his Tudat Zehut. No, I think it means he. Right. By Dira here, it doesn't mean his residence. It means
where he hangs out.
Where, yeah.
His location.
Yeah. So our Gemara, which talks about Ben Paruz Ben Yomo, Mukaf Ben Yomo, that if you live in Efrat, but you spend the day in Yerushalayim on Tedvav, you become a Mukaf Ben Yomo. You're a Yerushalmi for the day. So that's a Machlokas HaRishonim about how to understand that. So Rashi here, the Rashi we saw last week, has this idea of it has to do with where you are at Alot HaShachar, at dawn. That if you're in Efrat on the morning of the 14th, then you are keeping Purim. And if you're in Yerushalayim on the morning of the 15th, then you're keeping Shushan Purim. But the Rosh and the Tur have a different shita. And it's, Rashi, of course, is the Halacha L'maisa. It's Rashi and most of the Rishonim. And that's the position that we're familiar with. But the Rosh and the Tur both say that it has to do with where you are on the 14th. If you are in Yerushalayim on the morning of the 14th, what does that indicate?
If you're Yerushalayim where?
If you wake up in Yerushalayim on Purim, on Yud Dalid, what does that indicate?
That would indicate that you're going to have to do Purim on the 15th in Yerushalayim.
That you're planning on doing Shushan Purim.
You're planning on doing Shushan Purim. Right? You wake up in the morning of the 14th, why?
Because if you wake up in Yerushalayim on the 14th, Minastam, when are you planning on doing Purim?
On the 15th.
On the 15th.
Because otherwise you would have been somewhere else on the 14th. In the
right?
Morning. Unless one of these cases.
No, so the Rosh and the Tur don't have this idea of the, what I call the pseudo-Leibovitz idea that you could avoid Purim altogether.
But they right? do have both. You could do both, according to them.
Ah, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Maybe if you wake up in Efrat on the 14th, that indicates that you're doing your Purim on...
Even if you stay over in Yerushalayim the next day.
Yeah, so you did Purim. You were Yotze. Right, you did your Purim. Right? Which makes a lot of sense. Happens not to be the halacha, but it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it rejects this idea of being able to do Purim twice. And it rejects this idea of being able to avoid Purim altogether, right? Which, you know, again, which makes a lot of sense. Or the idea that you could completely orchestrate. Now, that position, those people that do keep 2 days, you know, usually teenagers, who do keep 2 days of Purim, is according to the Rav Rishonim. But there is a shita that they're not chayiv on the... on Shushan Purim, right? The Yachayim on Shushan Purim. So if you want to be machmir, and similarly, the position that tries to hyper halachize the circumstance and say I'm going to avoid Purim altogether, overlooks the fact that that doesn't work according to Gedolei Rishonim, the Tur and the Rosh. So,
what do they say? So if you wake up in Yerushalayim on the 14th in the morning,
wherever you wake up in the fourth on the morning of the 14th, if you wake up in Efrat, so Melam Manav Shachir Chayven
Pur,
and if you wake up in Yerushalayim on the morning of the 14th, then that indicates that you signed up for Shushan Purim that year.
Yeah, but then if you go during the day to Efrat,
you chayev to celebrate. Right, again, remember, none of this has to do with where you do your mitzvah. A few years ago, the year my wife was in Avelus, we always have Purim Suda together. So the year my wife was in Avelus, we took off from the big Purim Suda that we have with the five families, like the mafia, right? So we were just going to, so instead of just having us and our kids Purim Suda alone in our house, we decided we went to Yerushalayim, we went to a restaurant, and we had our Purim Suda in a restaurant. It was very civilized. Right? So there we were having Purim Suda in Yerushalayim. All the other people in the restaurant around us, it was, for them it was Sunday. It's really, I mean, it's just a day off. Mm-hmm. Right? And, which is the one thing I really miss
it's
about.
It's not even a day off.
Because you're busy making shlachmanos. Okay. It's like, you know, it's like Shabbos. You can make Shabbos in a half hour, you can make Shabbos in 12 hours. It still starts when you light the candles, right? It expands to fill the amount of time you have. So you don't have to be in Efrat. And Steve often points out, if you look in the Luach, it tells you that there's on Yud Dalet, there are Kriyot HaMegillah in Yerushalayim for B'nai Ir that find themselves in Yerushalayim but are chayiv in that day.
What about Matanot Levyonim? That seems like a good
thing. So Matanot Levyonim is L'chatchila, you should give Matanot Levyonim bo bayom to somebody who's chayiv in that day. Right? So that would be difficult, but you could first of all, before we left Efrat.
Right. But the other way around would be not as.
Yeah,
you
could also do it through a shaliach, and in the worst case, if you, let's say you're someplace where you can't find any anim. So you can be miyached the kesef and set aside to be given afterwards. It's not ideal, but it's what should be done.
This particular question is a theoretical question.
Throughout much of Jewish history, this was only there were always Jews in Eretz Yisrael.
Say it, for most Jews.
For most Jews in the world, this is only a theoretical question. Yes, yes. But it's not the most theoretical. In other words, there's all types of questions that we spend daf upon daf in the Gemara dealing with that are theoretical, you know, entirely Baha'i, but Bola Mazeh.
A walled city for Israel?
What?
A walled city for Israel?
No, there could be walled cities outside of Eretz Israel, but in reality, they don't exist.
Even
I think in Shushan, I don't know. No. There are no cities in Europe. There are no walled cities in Europe that go back to Yehoshua ben Nun. In Shushan itself, I don't know. Yeah, so Lamaisa, I don't think that there is any places in Chutz Laretz that keep Shushan Purim.
But in the places that they probably, I bet they would.
So in that book by Harari that goes through all of the Halacha Lamaisa, and he spends a lot of time on this question. But also, it's a question. You know, there's cities in Eretz Yisrael where it's a question of where and what and when and who and which walls in Tiberia, and we haven't gotten to the sugya of Samuch Veniri yet. That's a different sugya because it's not just inside the walls; it's also in proximity to the walls. So you have to define how proximate. But
that's a shuva, by the way. You might want to get the shuva of Kasher was asked about Megalos before there was a frat. Whether there was some of one there, and I think I think in the end maybe we didn't, but in a way it was like a whole question. It's amazing to think that there was nothing here, because the Megalos, I think, was
found.
The Megalos was found in 1975 when there was no frat in the way. Then you could, I guess, see from parts of Megalos.
But I could see.
It's in the journal of Noam.
Before they built Zayit, I could see Yerushalayim from the Kol Kibbutz.
Mm-hmm. You could
definitely see it clear day.
Yeah.
And you have the other side of the coin also. When Harnof first people moved in.
Yes, Rav Avadia is a Jew. Not just Harnof, Beit Vagan.
Right.
Beit Vagan, which is much closer. Ramot. So, Milamaisa, it ended up being that, like, anywhere that has a Jerusalem address keeps Shushan Purim. But it was not obvious. Right. But it was not.
That was actually, it was yes, one of the
Yes, so Rav Avadi discusses this. Yeah. So, but it was not obvious, and particularly when Beit Vagan was built, it was not so contiguous to the rest of the city the way it is. Harnof still is Bekoshi contiguous.
Now it's remote. Relatively contiguous right. with the Mischari area, right. but in the beginning.
Archoma must be a question. I mean, no, that's, I mean they're probably the neighborhood most isolated in terms of. There's not like a
but from Archoma, I think geographically it's closer and it's you can see probably, into the old city. It's Anyway, so the Russian the tour have this idea that no, it has to do the Mechayev is, and it's, according to Rashi and his crew, there are two separate Mechayevim. There's the Mechayev of Olot HaShachar on the 14th, and there's the Mechayev of Olot HaShachar on the 15th, and you might hit both of those targets, you might hit either of those targets, or you might hit neither of those targets. Which leads to three possibilities of keeping Purim for 2 days, 1 day, or no days. According to the Rosh, there's only one Mechayev, the morning of the 14th. If you wake up in the morning of the 14th and somebody says to you, Happy Purim, right? Because you're in Efrat, you keep on the 14th. If you wake up on the morning of the 14th... What?
Potentially you've missed out the evening.
Potentially you missed out in the evening. Right, potentially missed that in the evening, but
not necessarily. Because if that was the psak, you would have known it beforehand. Yeah. And if you were going to be there in the morning, you would have.
Right, but enochinami, right? Enochinami, that if you, so that's the rush and the tour.
Why do we possibly like Rashi?
Because it's the majority of the Rishonim. It's the majority of the
Torah decides who the majority is? He's the one who goes between the Rosh and the Rishon and the Rambam. So like,
it's not always. That's the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch goes according to the best of the three.
The Shulchan Aruch between the Torah? I thought the Torah picks.
Also, but that's because the Torah followed the Rosh. But the majority of Rishonim go like Rashi. So the Maisa that's the halacha. But it's not a unanimous opinion. So that's that sugya. The Mishnah had earlier raised this question of Mehechan Kore Adam et Megillah. How much of the Megillah do you have to read? We obviously, Paskin, you have to read the whole thing, but the Mishnah had the possibility that you don't have to read the, you have to read from a whole. Right, exactly. No, that's a time question. Well, again, the Mishnah, go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, Mehechan kore adam et megillah, v'yotzeba, yidei chovet ha-Rabbi Meir omer kula, which is the halacha. Rabbi Yehuda omer mi'ish Yehudi, from the beginning of the second chapter. Rabbi Yossi omer mi'achar ha-dvar ma'ela, from the beginning of the third chapter. Right? What do you think the machlokas is really about? In other words, what's the ikar? How much? In other words, how much of this story do you have to read in order to achieve persume nisa? And if all you did was read like the end about the taxes, so then you also like miss out on the persume nisa, right? So how much of this story do we have to read? How much of the whole Megillah? When did that become like the byword in Yiddish for like a convoluted story?
I mean, probably it's the story itself is pretty convoluted.
No, but when to say like it's a ganze Megillah. Right.
Yiddish is much harder to
track down. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Rashbi Omer, Mi Balayla Hahu. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. As Shem Bar Yochai says, Belaila Ahu. Right. When Achashverosh can't sleep,
yeah.
And he says, what do we do with those guys that saved me?
That guy.
So Omer Rabbi Yochanan v'kulan mikra echad darshu. All of the different shitot were playing off of one pasuk. They just read it in different ways. V'tichtov Esther Hamalka u'Mordechai Yehudi et kol tokef. How do you read that pasuk? Man de'omar kula tokfo shel Achashverosh. In other words, just the part of the Megillah, like the Megillah itself in the ninth perek, becomes oddly self-referential. Right? It's the only example, maybe besides a more enigmatic pasuk at the end of Vezot HaBracha, that tells you that Moshe wrote this shira. So, which we interpret, according to the Ramban, that it refers to the whole Torah, but that's not obviously the pshat. Right, but it's the only like self-referential case of the. You know, like if we go according to the Gemara in Bava Basra, that describes who all the different biblical authors were. Right, that Shmuel wrote Sefer Shmuel. But there's no description in Sefer Shmuel
of Shmuel
writing it.
Yeah.
Right, Adaraba, Shmuel, the character of Shmuel, seems to be distant from the narrator of the story.
Well, especially since he dies before it's over.
Right. So, okay, look, you can work that out. You don't have to say.
I'm saying,
how do we work that out with the Psukim and the Torah is more complicated. But you don't have to believe that when we say Shmuel wrote Sefer Shmuel, we don't have to believe that he wrote every letter, every word. Right? But, you know, just like. Right, so in the Sefer Shmuel, you read the book, it doesn't sound like an autobiographical work by this character writing about himself in the third person. But nevertheless, the Gemara presumed that Shmuel was the author of his own book. So at the end of Megillat Esther, you have this whole description of how they, dear reader, this story you've been listening to, this story you've been reading, so Mordechai and Esther, they wrote it down. Right, so they wrote Kol Tokef. So how do you translate Kol Tokef? They wrote the Ganze Megillah. Right? The whole force of this story. Right? The essence of the story. Tokef in that sense of the essence of the story. But tokef also means power. Right? So the Gemara says the different shitot about how much of this story has to be read. This is a story about power. Right? That's why Megillat Esther has always invited a kind of political commentary and analysis. You know, this book by what's his name a few years ago, Chazoni,
yeah.
Right, where he reads it as a kind of political parable, and his book got such attention, but it wasn't so groundbreaking. Because Chazal themselves read it as a story about political power, about how Jews, you know, the Jewish relationship with power is a tricky thing, right? Because we were always, that's the story of the Jews in Galut, we were always a people without power, attempting to survive by coming close to power, which always contains certain dangers, by gaining power by proxy, But you know, you mentioned the Malbim. The Malbim's whole commentary on Megillat Esther is written in this. Now he's of course a fairly late Achron, but Chazal themselves were doing. What's her name from Harvard? Ruth Weiss, Professor Ruth Weiss has an excellent book about. It's called Jews in Power, which starts with a discussion of Megillat Esther, right, as the first discussion of what does it mean for Jews to use, exercise, acquire.
She's going to add a new chapter now
about Jared, yeah. Gewalt. So Tokef, it's a story. In other words, Tokef here is a play on words. But here, by talking about the Tokef, the question is, who's Tokef? We're saying colloquially, V'tichtov Esther u'Mordechai Yehudi et kol Tokef. V'tichtov Esther u'Hamalkah u'Mordechai Yehudi et kol Tokef. Right? They wrote the story, the whole force, the whole story of the force of the story. Al tikra force, el tikra power. So whose power are we talking about? And the different shitot, the different shitot about how much of the story you have to read, all point to, depending upon how you, where you put the source of power, that will dictate. You know, is this the ikar or is that the ikar, right? And in the end, of course, Rebbe Meir says, "Well, you know, you have to read the whole thing because, you know, like once you start, but that's the whole point."
Well, no, the mayor would say that we read before,
so
it doesn't have to.
Right, but it could also be meaning that, in other words, that's the nature of power. It's this web of influences, and if you pull the thread on one place, it will end up unraveling, you know, somewhere else. You know, burglars forget to close the door, and it topples a presidency. Right. What will the future days and weeks and months hold? We don't know. Anyway, but we'll come back here next week.